piece bag, as most of our folks do, but he was so thrilled when he saw the candies and goodies and stuff in the bag that Sandra's daughter had to monitor him and say, "So what are we going to eat out of the bag today, Dad?" She said, because if he wouldn't have said it, he'd have sat down and got his best program on TV on and just eat the bag. But he thoroughly enjoyed it, and said to say thank you very much for that. Over the last several months, I've had several people in my life, family, friends, and members of the church across the nation, who have been dealing a lot with discouragement and even depression. I know that many of our widows and widowers deal with it regularly to one degree or another. Sometimes it's simply just being alone all the time. And that takes its toll after a period of time. Loneliness is hard to deal with, especially if you're not very mobile, and most of our elderly are not very mobile, especially our widows and widowers. When it's prolonged and the progress just doesn't seem to exist, it's nothing's getting better, nothing's seeming better, that can be really tough to cope with. And discouragement sets in. And when you're alone and you get discouraged, it's hard to get out of discouragement. And then discouragement eventually leads to and develops into depression. Discouragement and depression are normal emotions we all experience, even as Christians. Turn with me, if you would, to Job chapter 1. Job chapter 1. I just said, even as Christians, when I made the comment about depression and discouragement, because some people think that it is a sin to become depressed. That's a sad state of affairs if a person gets to that point, because then they feel like they're not only letting down, but now they're sinning on top of everything, and that's not going to help them get out of it. It is important, though, as Christians, to understand what the situation is with us and to be able to have the tools so that the emotions don't get the best of us, because they can. I'd like to start today by looking at a few biblical examples of discouragement and depression. That might seem like a strange way to begin a sermon, but I think you'll understand why as we get into it. First, I want to look at Job. Here in Job 1, you'll see that Job was a really, really good person. And he believed in God, and he trusted God implicitly. He really had a strong relationship with God. Let's start with reading in Job 1, verse 1. "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright and one who feared God and shunned evil. A good God, a really good God. And he had 7 sons and 3 daughters that were born to him." So he had a big family. "Also, his possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen," that's 1,000 oxen, 500 female donkeys, and a very large household of servants and workers. So that this man was the greatest of all of the people in the East. This was an important human being, not just physically as a person, but to God. And God thought he was great. God loved him. So you can see here in the first 3 verses of Job 1, God has really blessed Job. Job has blessings beyond imagination. And God really admires him. Drop down to verse 8. "Now Satan's up in heaven talking to God when all this dialogue is taking place that we're going to read here. And Satan's gone up, and God's talking to him about Job. And this is what God has to say. Verse 8 of Job 1. "Then the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil?'" He's bragging about Job to Satan. Now keep your place in Job, because we're going to be moving around here a little bit. But then Satan challenges God about Job. And he says, "Let me have at him, and I guarantee you he'll end up cursing you." So God allows it. So Satan goes to work on Job and kills all 10 of his children. Now, having been in the ministry for many years and just having had people that I know, I've known several people who lost a child. And it's one of the most devastating things a human being can face. He lost all of his children. Every single one. Not one was left. God allowed this to happen. At first, Job accepted all this. And this would actually bless God in prayer after it all happened. He lost everything. But then his wife pipes up and decides to contribute something to the conversation here. Job 2. Go over to Job 2 and verse 9. And let's see her discouraging response to her husband. Keep in mind, she's hurting too. She lost her family too. She lost her household too. She lost all of her belongings as well. Verse 9 of Job 2. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity?
Curse God."
Eventually gets to Job. It starts eating at him. And eventually Job gets discouragement and depression setting in, and he just starts having a difficult time in his life. Drop down to Job 3, verse 1. Job 3, chapter 3, is an entire prayer of a lament and agony that Job sends up to God. And you might want to read it sometime later today. Job 3, verse 1. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. "I wish I were never born." And Job spoke and said, "May the day perish on which I was born, and the night in which it was said a male child was conceived." He said, "I'd like to have that eradicated so that I wouldn't be alive. I can't deal with this. I can't deal with what's going on in my life right now. This is too much. It was so bad, Job wished he were never born." Keep in mind who we're talking about here. This is a kingpin in society. This is a man with a statue
of importance to God. Somebody that God respected and somebody God that looked up to. You know, we too can feel let down by our friends and family at times. When we're having a difficult time, maybe they don't understand what we're going through. Maybe they just don't offer the help that we think that they should be offering to us. But our disappointment can turn into discouragement, and discouragement can turn into depression. Let's look at another example. 1 Kings 19. 1 Kings 19. Just back a few pages to your left. 1 Kings 19. In 1 Kings 19, we have another person, Elijah, who also became discouraged with his life's circumstances. I've used this a couple times over the years in my sermons because it's very real. And it's something that we can identify with because this is a powerful man of God. This is a prophet. This is one of God's prophets. This is a prophet of God who had just performed many miraculous events. Miraculous things took place at the hands of Job, or at the hands of Elijah, rather. And he did this dramatic stuff at Mount Carmel in front of all these other yahoos that were supposed to be the big guys. But Job had hoped that by doing all of this, he would convince all of Israel and King Ahab and Jezebel, his wife, to turn around, repent, and come God's way. But none of them did that. They actually got angrier when Job did what he did and got to the point where they wanted to kill him. And Job couldn't deal, or Elijah couldn't deal with this. He was hurting. He thought his entire ministry was a waste. All that he had done. He just wanted to die. Look at 1 Kings 19 in just one verse. 1 Kings 19, verse 4. "But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he prayed that he might die. And he said to God, 'It is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's.'" I don't want to deal with this anymore. Kill me. End my life. I remind you again who this is. This is a prophet that God handpicked. A prophet this has happened to. One of the best, most profound men of the time, Job, it happened to. So we see yet another example about how discouragement sets in people's lives, even for one of God's prophets and who had performed some dramatic miracles. It's sometimes like we only look at the negatives in our lives and we have a hard time focusing on the positives. And that's what these individuals have done. Let's go to a book that we rarely go to next, Lamentations. The book of Lamentations, which is sandwiched between Jeremiah and Ezekiel. If you can find Jeremiah, it's the next book. If you can find Ezekiel, it's just before Ezekiel. We rarely turn here. We're going to go to Lamentations 3 to be exact. Again, it's right after the book of Jeremiah. And in Jeremiah, the previous book, in chapter 20, we're not going to read this, but I'm going to share something with you. Jeremiah really got upset with God. Really upset. Angry with God. He was feeling like God was against him. And here's Jeremiah. What's Jeremiah? A prophet. As I told everybody in Reno this morning, Jeremiah wasn't a bullfrog, he was a prophet. Just wanted to see if you're awake. But Jeremiah gets really upset with God and angry with him, and he feels like God's against him, and he says he felt like God was just hanging him out to dry, making fun of him, mocking him, mistreating him, hurting him on purpose and intentionally. He too, Jeremiah, used the words of Job. In Jeremiah 20 and verse 4, again, I'm not going to turn there, but these are the words that Jeremiah used. Cursed be the day I was born. Let the day not be blessed in which my mother bore me. This man's really upset. He wished he were never born. As we read through Lamentations 3, I want you to understand what's going on here. Jeremiah is who wrote Lamentations. And he had a temporary loss of hope and trust and belief in God, which brought him to write the words that we're going to read about. I'd like you to think about how dejected a person would have to become to write the words we're going to read that the prophet Jeremiah wrote about himself and God. Lamentations 3, verse 1. I am the man who has seen affliction by the rod of his, God's wrath. He's beaten up on me. He has led me and made me walk in darkness and not in light. He's messing with my mind. He tells me I'm going down one path and he takes me down another path and it's destruction. Surely he has turned his hand against me time and time again throughout the day. He's just constantly harassing me. He has aged my flesh and my skin and broken my bones. He turned me into a mess. He has besieged me and surrounded me with bitterness and woe. He has set me in dark places like the dead of long ago. And what happens when the dead are dead for a long period of time? They stink. Rotten flesh stinks. He's saying, that's what I feel like. I feel like a piece of rotten dead flesh. I stink as a human being. He has hedged me in so I cannot get out. He has made my chain heavy. Even when I cry and shout, he shuts up my prayer. He doesn't even listen to me anymore. He has blocked my paths with hewn stone. He has made my paths crooked. You can go on and read the rest of this chapter. It is woe after woe after woe. 66 verses worth. Jeremiah is feeling lost, dejected, and completely discouraged. Let's go to Luke 24. Look at another example, sort of a different phase of discouragement. Luke chapter 24. Again, we've read this passage a couple of times in the past year or so, but it fits here today, so I'm going to use it again. This is a time after Jesus Christ had been crucified. He was buried for 3 days and three nights. And the disciples are dejected. It's like, we lost him. He's gone. And he has this interaction with a couple of these disciples as they're walking on this road, going to a little village called Emmaus. And he sees these disciples are all despondent. So he goes up and he knows that they're discouraged and stuff. So he starts walking along with them and he asks them, what's going on? How come you guys are so despondent? How come you're so discouraged? Listen to their responses to Christ about what they witnessed and how they perceived life. Luke 24, verse 19, when Christ asked them what was troubling them. And he said to them, what things are you talking about? So they said to him, the things concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people. He was powerful. And how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death, and then they crucified him. This is our king. But we were all hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, today is the third day since these things happened. And he was supposed to be resurrected, and we don't even see him. And they're like throwing the baby out with the bathwater here. Jesus taught them about this, but they didn't get it. And now they're walking away. They're leaving town. They want to get out of Dodge because this is like misery for them. Said he was supposed to save us, and he didn't save any of that. We know he's not even with us anymore. They couldn't see the bigger picture and felt disappointed that Jesus Christ did not fight for the kingdom that day or that time. Let's turn now to Matthew 26, just back a few pages. Matthew chapter 26. For my last example of discouragement and dejection. So far, we have discussed Job, a mighty man of God. We have discussed Elijah, a prophet of God. We have discussed Jeremiah, a prophet of God. And we've discussed a couple of the disciples of Jesus Christ who worked and walked with him for 3.5 years. All despondent. All discouraged. Some even discouraged and depressed to the point of wanting to die. Now let's look at the most outspoken of all the disciples. The one which portrayed an almost defiant arrogance even around Jesus Christ. You probably figured out who I'm referring to. I'm talking about Peter. We'll look at the night Jesus Christ was taken captive. And we're going to begin in Matthew 26 with a dialogue just before his capture, where he told all of his 12 disciples that he was with, or 11 at that point, that they would stumble that night because of him. Matthew 26, verse 31. Then Jesus said to them, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee. Peter then answered and said to him, even if all these other guys stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble because of you. And Jesus said to him, assuredly, I say to you that this night, before the rooster crows, not only will you deny me, you will deny me 3 times. Peter said to him again, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And so said all the disciples. Let's drop down to verse 74 of Matthew 26. We see that Peter felt discouraged with himself when he realized that he wasn't as courageous as he thought he was. This is just minutes later, an hour or two later maybe. Jesus had warned him that he would deny him, but Peter's pride kept him from seeing clearly who he was as a person. Until it was too late. Verse 74 of Matthew 26. Then he began to curse and swear, saying, I do not know this man. He's lying now. Immediately, a rooster crowed. All of a sudden, it came back. What Jesus Christ had said to him just minutes earlier. And Peter remembered the word of Jesus who had said to him, before the rooster crows, you will deny me 3 times. So he went out from there and wept bitterly. He bawled his eyes. He was sick, sick to his stomach at what he had become. You know, we too can feel discouraged and even depressed when we fail to live up to our own expectations and maybe the expectations of somebody else. Discouragement happens, even to the strongest and to the best of people. Sometimes we can set standards for ourselves that are ridiculously high. And then when we don't meet them, we get discouraged, we get despondent, even go into depression. We allow other people's expectations of us rule our lives sometimes. And when we don't live up to them, we get dejected, we get despondent, we get depressed. Let's take a look at a few ways to address discouragement and depression. This isn't an answer all to everything, but I think it's a step in the right direction. First, turn to Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4, phenomenal chapter of the Bible. Point number one, be honest with yourself. It does us no good to pretend that we don't feel the way we do. And it does us no good to hide it, especially hide it from people that are close to us. You can't take action against the negative emotion until you first admit that you have it. There's no shame in this. It's not a disgrace. It's not a sin to be dejected, despondent, or depressed. It's something that needs to be dealt with. It's something that needs to be worked with. A strong Christian is not someone who never experiences negative feelings or someone who gets down or dejected. A strong Christian is someone who has learned what to do with those feelings and does something about it. And the first thing that we can do is recognize that we have the problem. Recognize that it's become an issue in our lives. You know, we've spent a lot of time discussing in recent sermons about Psalms and Proverbs. Boy, those two books are loaded with tidbits about life and how to bring somebody, how to bring yourself out of depression, out of discouragement, out of despondency. But you know, the key to success in all that I'm going to say from here forward lies on two things. One, believing that the words that we read in this book are the words from God. And two, trusting that He really is active in our lives. If we don't have both of those, using the Bible to do anything won't accomplish anything. Huge step for us to get to first. Look how Paul addressed the challenges of life in Philippians 4, beginning in verse 10. Philippians 4, verse 10. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am in to be content. Paul went through hell in his life. A lot of trauma, a lot of pain, and a lot of suffering. He said, I know how to be abased in verse 12, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Paul never lost the big picture. Paul probably, when he would get into despondent moments or dejection or just hurting and wondering what's going on, he probably would remind himself of those moments that he spent talking with Jesus Christ and all the words of encouragement and all the guidelines that he gave him and all the promises that he made to him. So Paul says, yeah, you know, I've had my ups and I've had my downs, but you know what? You can learn to live, you can learn to deal with these things. When you trust God, you believe God, and you can go to his word and see words of encouragement. He said, it all works like that, but you've got to be able to redirect yourself back to the leader, back to the king, back to the Savior, Jesus Christ. He said, that helps. He said, when he's on your side, when you're dealing with him and you're close to him, he strengthens you. And he can strengthen you through anything. He said, I can do everything. All things through him. I can go through depression. I can get out of depression. I can keep myself from getting down into the bottom of the tank by going to him, trusting him, and asking him for his guidance. So the first thing we can do is be honest with ourselves about how we really feel And don't be afraid to share it. Let somebody else know, a close friend or a mate or a relative or somebody that you know and you love and you can trust, so that you can talk about it. And then trust that God will guide and lead the conversation to help you. Point number two, let's turn back to 1 Kings 19 first. 1 Kings 19, where we were just a little bit ago. 1 Kings 19. Point number two is this. Take care of your body. Take care of your body. With almost all the people I was referring to at the beginning of the sermon, this has played a part in their despondency, in their depression, or their discouragement. If your body isn't working, your mind and emotions and will are also weakened. I love how God tended to Elijah's body first. Didn't talk to him about his depression. Didn't talk to him about his anger. Didn't talk to him about wanting to die. Didn't talk to him about wanting to take his life. Didn't talk about any of that. He nourished him first before addressing anything else. And he provided angels to feed him and help him and take care of him. Let's look here. 1 Kings 19, verse 5. Then as he lay and slept under a broom tree, suddenly an angel touched him. And I think it's important to note that he touched him. He didn't rattle him, didn't throw water in his face, didn't smack him, didn't jolt him. He knew he was hurting. He knew he was in pain, emotional pain. So he probably just came up and just probably lightly laid his hand on his shoulder until he got his attention. And once he awakened, he said, "Arise, Elijah, and eat. You need some nutrition. You need some strength back in your body. We need to get your body back in the right condition." Then he looked, and there by his head was a cake baked on coals and a jar of water. So he ate and drank, and he went back to sleep, laid down again. That's what people do when they're depressed. All they want to do is sleep. I can remember when I've gone through moments of depression in my life, man, I hated getting up, and I couldn't wait to go to bed. It's because you don't want to be alive. You don't want to be around the world. You don't want to be interacting with anybody or anything because it's not working. God understands that. But you know what? Keeping our body healthy, keeping our body strong is one of the things that we really need to pay attention to more and more in our lives. And the angel of the Lord, and then he looked and saw the bread, and so he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came back the second time and touched him and said, "Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for you." He had to get his nutrition in his body. He had to get his body back to the strength he needed to have it at. So he arose and ate and drank, and he went on the strength of that for 40 days and 40 nights as far as Horeb, the mountain of God. I could and probably should give a sermon on how to take care of our bodies sometime in the near future. What we eat and what we do to abuse our bodies. We know what the body is, don't we? It's the temple of God. It's where he resides. And he expects us to take care of it. He expects us to keep it as healthy as we can possibly keep it. By what we eat, what we do, exercise that we get, everything that has to do with keeping the body strong and healthy. And some of the things that we do to abuse our bodies. And contrary to popular belief, fast food is not the meal of champions. Sometimes the circumstances of life can just drain us dry, and we need to pause. Just stop doing and simply refresh and rest. Sometimes that's the only answer to the issues that we're dealing with. Let's turn over to Philippians 4 again. Philippians 4. Again, a wonderful chapter of the Bible, Philippians 4. Read it. I think you'll be glad you did. Another point about how to deal with these emotional issues of life. This may sound like a strange one. My friend Jim Butler would appreciate this one probably. Pay attention to your thought life. Pay attention to your thought life. how, and what you think about. Every time we read the word meditate in the Bible, it could be replaced with the word think. That's all it means. Think. Think about it. Mull it over. Chew on it a little bit mentally. Maturing as Christians mean we learn to think truthfully and stay focused on what is going to be beneficial to our minds and our lives. Paul knew all about that, and he espoused it here in Philippians 4. Let's pick it up, Philippians 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, think about these things. Yet where does our mind tend to go? It tends to go to the negative. And we start thinking about all that. Why do you think Paul said, think about all these positive things? Because it feeds the body positive input. And it gets the body and the mind and the heart starting to work in the right direction, realizing and understanding there are things that are good going on in life. He said, the things which you've learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do. And the God of peace will be with you. That's a promise. That's a promise by God and Jesus Christ given to us by the Apostle Paul. What we think about affects us. It hugely affects us. The contrary is true too. When we go to the negative side of life and we start thinking about all that, then we start putting more thought into it and more push bits and pieces into it, and we hear somebody say something, and we think, well, that's probably what that means, and then we hear somebody else talk about it, and then we think, well, that's what that means, and the next thing we know, we got ourselves all messed up mentally, and we become paranoid. And then we come to find out none of it's true. And we've about destroyed our life with it. It hurts your heart. It hurts your stomach. It hurts your intestines. It hurts your pancreas. It hurts virtually all the organs of the body when we go into those kinds of modes. And it is a trigger point to depression. Let's go back to Philippians 2 Corinthians 10, just a few pages back to your left. 2 Corinthians 10, Paul shows us that it's more than just thinking about things that we have to pay attention to. But there is a how that is involved with the way that we think. Sometimes our thoughts can get us into trouble if we let them, as I just mentioned. And that's what Paul discusses here in 2 Corinthians 10. Let's pick it up in 2 Corinthians 10, verse 4. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 4. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds. Powerful statement. Casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. He said, you can't just let your mind wander off. You can't let your mind go down that negative path of thinking. You can't do that. Because what you're doing is you're destroying the very weapons that God has given us, as he says, that can pull down strongholds. But it starts in the head. It starts with the way we think, what we're thinking about, and how we deal with it. God says, take all that crap that we have going through our heads, that we expose ourselves to by what we do, what we watch, how we interact, how we talk. All of that puts negative stuff into our heads sometimes. And he said, you've got to start bringing that into captivity and control it. I believe all of us attempt to make sense of the things that happen to us in our lives. We try to figure out why they happen and what it all means sometimes. It's crucial to pay attention to the stories that we are telling ourselves. Let me repeat that. It's crucial to pay attention to the stories that we are telling ourselves, about others, about God, or a particular situation, and whether or not those stories are actually true. Or do we just surmise that it's true, or suspect that it's true, and we start telling ourselves it's true, and you know what? We start believing it, whether it's true or not. For example, if you look at what Elijah was telling himself after he would become discouraged, much of it was not true at all. Yet because he thought it, it added to his misery. Jeremiah was also telling him things himself about God that wasn't true. And it added to his misery. And he started to believe his version of his interpretation of life. And none of it was true. And it threw him into depression and anger and angst. With both Elijah and Jeremiah, once their thoughts were changed, they also had a change of heart and a change of mind. And you know what? Their circumstances were basically the same. But everything was good now. And everything can be good if we use God to help us get there. When their thoughts changed and their negative emotions were gone, even though their circumstances were basically the same. Go back to 2 Corinthians 4, just about two or three pages to your left. Once again, Paul will assist us in addressing the discouragement of life, which leads to point number four, train yourself to see both sides at the same time. You'll know what I mean in just a moment. Paul told us to renew our minds and therefore to become transformed. In other words, our minds need to be trained to think differently than they were thinking in the past. In 2 Corinthians 4, we'll see part of this training is to learn to see both the temporal life that we live now and the eternal life at the same time. Being able to look at both sides of life at the same time. Paul speaks honestly of his temporal, physical, and emotional pain. Yet he did not become crushed. He was not despairing. He was not, didn't feel abandoned, and he didn't feel like he was destroyed. Because he kept the eternal picture always before his mind, no matter what his circumstances were. Why didn't he get like that? Because he firmly fixed on the eternal perspective with his spiritual eyes. 2 Corinthians 4, let's begin in verse 8. 2 Corinthians 4, 8. We are hard-pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always caring about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our body. In other words, constantly reminding ourselves what Jesus Christ did for us. He died a brutal death for you, for me. For we who live are always delivered to death for Jesus' sake, that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our mortal flesh. We're always struggling, so then death is working in us, but life in you too. And since we have the same spirit of faith, according to what is written, I believed and therefore I spoke, we also believe and therefore speak. Knowing that he who raised up the Lord Jesus will also raise us up with Jesus and will present us with you. For all these things are for your sakes, that grace, having spread through the many, may cause thanksgiving to abound in the glory of God. Therefore, do not lose heart. Too much has already been done for you. Too much has already been done for mankind. He said, way, way, way too much has been done to lose heart. Do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing and struggling, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day if we let it. That's our role, to keep that renewed. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporary, It's not going to last. But the things which are not seen are eternal. Being able to see both sides of life at the same time is crucial, brethren. There's always the eternal side, the side where God and Christ intervene. Paul never minimized the pain of the temporal. Yet discouragement didn't win because he knew God's purposes. And he said they're at work in him every single day. Okay, my last point in dealing with discouragement. First, turn back to Psalm 27. Psalm 27. I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting pretty warm. Maybe it's because I'm flapping my jaws here too much. Psalm 27. Last point. Last point. Get close to God. Get close to God. The truth is, life is hard. And people do disappoint us. And people do hurt us. And we don't always understand what God's doing in our life. Several writers in the Old Testament referred to God as being good and their stronghold in time of trouble. They went back to him. Why? Because they believe that he put these words in this book. They're his words. And they believe and trust in him. That's why that worked. If we're not in a close, trusting relationship with God, life's troubles can become absolutely unbearable because we have no hope. Here in Psalm 27, David is talking about how he constantly turned to God in time of need. He knew it, he believed it, and he trusted it. Let's begin in Psalm 27, verse 13. Listen to this. I would have lost heart. I would have given up. Unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. He kept reminding himself, God is going to bail me out. God is going to come to my aid. God is going to intervene in my life eventually. He kept telling himself that. He kept thinking about that. Wait on the Lord, he says in verse 14. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Don't give up hope. Get close to God. And back in the book of James, we're not going to turn to James chapter 4. What does it say back there? James said, draw close to God and he will draw close to you. And I know when we're down, we're out, depressed, despondent, that's like, we don't want to talk about anything to anybody. But if we want to get out of it, we can try these ways, try these ways, because God's promised us to come to our aid when we need him. As we close, keep this in mind, especially with Thanksgiving coming up this next week. The best way to get rid of a negative feeling is to replace it with another positive feeling. The Bible points out that in everything, give thanks, for this is the will of God. We've got Thanksgiving Day coming up. It's a great time, if we don't do it any other time of the year, to stop, sit back, maybe go to a quiet room, just you, and just think, how has he blessed me? What has he given to me? What has he promised to me? And start thinking about those things and bring that to the table. Gratitude, brethren, is a powerful antidote for discouragement. Look for something to be thankful for. We may not be able to give God thanks for the difficult situation that we find ourselves in at any given moment in time, but we can learn to look for the things that we can be thankful for and focus on that. So keep in mind, one, be honest with yourself. Two, take care of your body. Three, pay attention to your thought life. Train yourself to see life from both sides at the same time. The temporal and the eternal, and get closer to God. These approaches can help us deal with discouragement and a lot of other things in our lives. Have a happy Sabbath and a very enjoyable Thanksgiving.